Chapter 13. Atlas. It's amazing how a night can go from being something I've been hoping would happen for years to something I've been dreading would happen for years. If I hadn't received that text just as I was dropping off Lily, I absolutely would have kissed her. But I want our first kiss as adults to be free from distraction. The text was from Darren, informing me that my mother is at Bibbs. I didn't tell Lily about the text because I hadn't yet told her my mother was attempting to work her way back into my life. And then as soon as I told her about my mother calling me, I regretted it. The date was going so well, and I was risking that by ending it on such a somber note. I didn't text Darren back because I didn't want to interrupt my time with Lily. But even after the date ended and we drove away in separate cars, I still didn't text Darren back. I drove around for half an hour trying to figure out what to do. I'm hoping my mother got tired of waiting for me. I took my time arriving back to the restaurant, but I'm here now, and I guess I need to confront this. She seems adamant about speaking with me. I park in the alley behind Bibbs so that I can go through the back door in case she's waiting in the restaurant lobby or at a table. I'm not sure she would recognize me if she saw me, but I'd rather have the advantage by approaching her on my terms. Darren notices me enter through the back door and immediately makes his way over. You get my text? I nod and remove my coat. I did. Is she still here? Yeah. She insisted on waiting. I sat her at table 8. Thanks. Darren looks at me cautiously. Maybe I'm overstepping, but I swear you said your mother was dead. That almost makes me laugh. I never said dead. I said she was gone. There's a difference. I can tell her you aren't coming in tonight. He must sense the storm brewing. It's okay. I have a feeling she isn't going away until I talk to her. Darren nods and then spins to head back to his station in the kitchen. I'm glad he's not asking too many questions since I have no idea why she's here or who she even is now. She probably wants money. Hell, I'd give it to her if it means I don't have to deal with her calling or showing up again. I should prepare for that outcome. I go to my office and grab a handful of cash out of the safe, and then I make my way through the kitchen doors out into the restaurant. I hesitate before glancing at table 8. When I do, I'm relieved to see her back is to me. I calm myself with a deep breath and then I make my way over to her. I don't want to have to hug her or fake niceties, so I let no time lag between us making eye contact and me taking a seat directly across from her. She has the same unaffected expression she's always had when she looks across the table at me. There's a small frown playing at the corner of her mouth, but it's always there. She's constantly, albeit inadvertently, frowning. She looks worn. It's only been about 13 or so years since I've seen her last, but there are decades worth of new lines that have formed around her eyes and mouth. She takes me in for a moment. I know I look vastly different from the last time she saw me, but she makes no indication that she's surprised by that. She's completely stoic, as if I'm the one who should speak first. I don't. Is this all yours? She finally asks, waving a hand around the restaurant. I nod. Wow. To anyone else watching us, they might think she's impressed. But they don't know her like I know her. That one word was meant as a put-down. As if she's saying, "Wow, Atlas, you're not smart enough for something like this. How much do you need?" She rolls her eyes. "I'm not here for money." "What is it then? You need a kidney? A heart?" She leans back against her seat, resting her hands in her lap. "I forgot how hard it is to have a conversation with you." "Then why do you keep trying?" My mother's eyes narrow. She's only ever known the version of me that was intimidated by her. I'm no longer intimidated, just angry and disappointed. She huffs, and then brings her arms back up to the table, folding them together. She looks at me pointedly. "I can't find Josh. I was hoping you've talked to him." I know it's been a long time since I've seen my mother, but I can't for the life of me place anyone named Josh. Who the hell is Josh, a new boyfriend she thinks I should know about? Is she still using drugs? He does this all the time, but never for this long. They're threatening to file truancy charges on me if he doesn't show up back to school. I am so lost. Who is Josh? Her head falls back as if she's irritated that I'm not following along. Josh, your little brother. He ran away again. My brother? Brother. Did you know parents can go to jail for truancy violations? I'm looking at jail time, Atlas. I have a brother? You knew I was pregnant when you ran away. I absolutely didn't know. I didn't run away. You kicked me out. I don't know why I clarify that. She's fully aware of that fact. She's just trying to deflect blame. But her kicking me out when she did makes so much more sense now. They had a baby on the way, and I no longer fit into the picture. I bring both arms up and clasp my hands behind my head, frustrated, shocked. Then I drop them to the table again and lean forward for clarity. I have a brother? How old is he? Is he Tim's son? He's 11. And yes, Tim is his father, but he left years ago. I don't even know where he lives now. I wait for this to fully hit. I was expecting anything and everything but this. I have so many questions, but the most important thing right now is to figure out where this kid is. When was the last time you saw him?
About 2 weeks ago, she says.
And you reported it to the police?
She makes a face. No, of course not. He's not missing. He's just trying to piss me off.
I have to squeeze my temples to refrain from raising my voice. I still don't understand how she found me or why she thinks an 11-year-old kid is trying to teach her a lesson, but I'm laser-focused on finding him now. Did you move back to Boston? Did he go missing here?
My mother makes a confused face.
Move back? It's like we're speaking two different languages. Did you move back here, or do you still live in Maine?
Oh, God, she mutters, attempting to remember. I came back like 10 years ago. Josh was just a baby.
She's lived here for 10 years?
They're going to arrest me, Atlas.
Her child has been missing for 2 weeks, and she's more worried about being arrested than she is about him. Some people never change. What do you need me to do?
I don't know. I was hoping he reached out to you and that maybe you knew where he was. But if you didn't even know he existed,
why would he reach out to me? Does he know about me? What does he know?
Other than your name? Nothing. You were never around.
My adrenaline is rushing through me so fast, I'm shocked I'm still sitting across from her. My whole body is tense when I lean forward. Let me get this straight. I have a little brother I never knew about, and he thinks I didn't care that he existed?
I don't think he actively thinks about you, Atlas. You've been absent his whole life.
I ignore her dig because she's wrong. Any kid that age would think about the brother they believed abandoned them. I'm sure he hates the idea of me. Hell, he's probably the one who's been... Shit. Of course. This explains so much. I would bet both of my restaurants that he's the one who has been vandalizing them. And why the misspelling reminded me of my mother. The kid is 11. I'm sure he's capable of Googling my information. Where do you live? I ask her. She practically squirms in her seat.
We're in between houses. We've been staying at the Rismore Inn for the past couple of months.
Go back there in case he shows up, I suggest.
I can't afford to stay there anymore. I'm in between jobs, so I'm staying with a friend for a couple of days.
I stand up and pull the money out of my pocket. I drop it on the table in front of her. The number you called me on the other day, is that your cell?
She nods, sliding the money off the table and into her hand.
I'll call you if I find out anything. Go back to the hotel and try to get the same room. He needs you to be there if he comes back.
My mother nods, and for the first time, she looks somewhat ashamed. I leave her to sit in that feeling without saying goodbye. I'm hoping she's feeling at least a fraction of what she made me feel for years. What she's likely making my little brother feel right now. I can't believe this. She went and made a whole human and didn't think to tell me? I walk straight through the kitchen and out the back door. No one is in the alley right now, so I take a moment to pull myself together. I'm not sure I've ever been this stunned. Her child is out there running the streets of Boston all alone, and she waits 2 goddamn weeks before doing anything about it? I don't know why it surprises me. This is who she is. It's who she's always been. My phone begins to ring. I'm so on edge, I want to throw it at the dumpster, but when I see it's Lily attempting to FaceTime me, I steady myself. I slide my finger across the screen, preparing to tell her it isn't a good time, but when her face pops up, it feels like the perfect time. I'm relieved to hear from her, even though it's only been an hour since I last saw her. I'd give anything to reach through the phone and hug her. Hey! I try to keep my voice stable, but there's a sharpness to it that cuts through. She can tell because her expression grows concerned. Are you okay? I nod. Things sort of went south after I went back to work. I'm fine, though. She smiles, but it's kind of sad. Yeah, my night went south, too. I didn't notice at first, but it looks like she's been crying. Her eyes are glassy and a little puffy. Are you okay? She forces another smile. I will be. I just wanted to say thank you for tonight before I went to sleep. I hate that she's not standing in front of me right now. I don't like seeing her sad. It reminds me too much of all the times I saw her sad when we were younger. At least back then, I was close enough to hug her. Maybe I still can. Would a hug make you feel better? Obviously. I'll be fine after I get some sleep, though. Talk tomorrow. I have no idea what happened between our date and this phone call, but she looks completely defeated. She looks very similar to how I feel. Hugs take 2 seconds, and you'll sleep so much better. I'll be back here before they even know I've left. What's your address? A small grin peeks through her gloom. You're going to drive 5 miles just to give me a hug? I'd run 5 miles just to give you a hug. That makes her smile even bigger. I'll text you my address. But don't knock too loud. I just put Emmy down. See you soon.
Chapter 14. Lily. I've been out of the dating loop for a while, so if hug is code for something else, I have no idea. Surely a hug still just means a hug. I can barely work social media, much less keep up with slang. I swear, I am the most out-of-touch millennial I know. It's as if I skipped right over Gen X and into boomer territory. I'm a boomer millennial. A boolennial. Hell, my mother is a boomer and probably knows more about these things than I do. She's the one with a new boyfriend. I should call her and ask for pointers. I brush my teeth, just in case a hug is a kiss. And then I change clothes twice until I end up back in the pajamas I had on when I FaceTimed him. I'm trying way too hard to look like I'm not trying too hard. Sometimes being a woman is so dumb. I'm pacing my apartment, anxious for his knock. I don't know why I'm so nervous. I just spent 3 hours with him. Well, 1.5 if I don't count the nap I took in the middle of our date. Several dozen paces later, there's a light tap on my apartment door. I know it's Atlas, but I glance through the peephole anyway. He even looks good all distorted through a peephole. I smile when I noticed he changed too. Just his jacket, but still. He was wearing a thick black coat when we went out earlier, but now he's wearing a simple gray hoodie. Dear God, I like it so much. I open the door, and Atlas leaves 0 seconds between our first moment of eye contact and when his arms sweep me in for a hug. He holds me so tight, it makes me want to ask him what was so bad about the last hour, but I don't. I just quietly hug him back. I settle my cheek against his shoulder and revel in the comfort of him. Atlas didn't even step inside my apartment. We're just standing in the doorway, as if a hug still just means a hug. His cologne is nice. It reminds me of summer, like he's defying the cold. He seemed so concerned about smelling like garlic earlier, but all I could smell was this same cologne. He lifts a hand to the back of my head and rests it there gently.
You okay?
I am now. My response is muffled against him. You? He sighs, but he doesn't say he's okay. He just leaves his answer hanging in his exhale until he slowly releases me. He lifts a hand and runs his fingers down a piece of my hair.
I hope you get some sleep tonight.
You too, I say.
I'm not going home. I'm staying at the restaurant tonight.
He shakes that sentence off like he shouldn't have said anything.
It's a long story, and I need to get back. I'll catch you up on everything tomorrow.
I want to invite him in and make him give me all the details right now, but I feel like he'd offer them up if he were in the mood. I'm certainly not in the mood to talk about what happened with Ryle, so I'm not going to force him to talk about whatever put a damper on his night. I just wish there was a way I could make it better. I perk up when I think of something that might do the trick. Do you need more reading material? His eyes glint with a twinge of excitement.
I do, actually.
Wait here. I head to my bedroom and look in my box of things, searching for the next journal. When I find it, I take it back to him. This one is a little more graphic, I tease. Atlas takes the journal with one hand and then slides his other arm around my lower back and tugs me against him. Then, quickly, he steals a peck. It's so soft and fast, it doesn't even fully register that he kissed me until it's over.
Good night, Lily.
Good night, Atlas. Neither of us moves. It feels like it might hurt if we separate. Atlas pulls me even tighter against him, and then he lowers his lips to the spot near my collarbone where my tattoo is hidden beneath my shirt. The tattoo he doesn't even know is there. He kisses it unknowingly, and then, sadly, he leaves. I close the door and press my forehead against it. I feel all the familiar feelings of a crush, but this time those feelings are accompanied by worry and hesitation, even though it's Atlas, and Atlas is one of the good ones. I blame Ryle for that. He took what little trust I had left in men, thanks to my father, and he stripped me of it. But I think this crush is a sign that Atlas might be able to give back what my father and Ryle took from me. My stomach moves from the flutters Atlas left me with to what feels like a 6-foot drop on that thought, because I know how that would make Ryle feel. The more joy I get from my interactions with Atlas, the more dread I feel about having to break the news to Ryle.
Chapter 15. Atlas. When I was in the military, I was stationed with a friend who had family from Boston. His aunt and uncle were getting ready to retire and wanted to sell their restaurant. It was called Mila's, and when I visited it on leave one year, I absolutely fell in love with the place. I can say it was the food or the fact that it was located in Boston, but the truth is, I fell in love with it because of the preserved tree growing in the center of the main dining room. The tree reminded me of Lily. If anything is going to remind someone of their first love, trees are probably the last thing you want as a reminder. They're everywhere, which is probably why I've thought about Lily every day since I was 18. But that could also be because I still, to this day, feel like I owe her my life. I'm not sure if it was the tree or the fact that the restaurant came almost fully stocked and staffed, but I felt a pull to buy it when it became available. It wasn't my goal to own a restaurant right out of the military. I had planned to work as a chef to gain experience, but when this opportunity presented itself, I couldn't walk away from the prospect. I used the money I saved up from my time as a Marine
and I secured a business loan, bought the restaurant, changed the name, and created a whole new menu. Sometimes I feel guilty for the success Bibbs has had, like I haven't paid my dues. I didn't just inherit the staff who already knew what they were doing, but I inherited customers as well. I didn't build it from the ground up, which is why I feel a heavy amount of imposter syndrome when people congratulate me on the success of Bibbs. That's why I opened Corrigan's. I don't know that I was trying to prove anything to anyone other than myself, but I wanted to know that I could do it. I wanted the challenge of creating something from nothing and watching it flourish and grow. Like what Lily wrote in her journal about why she liked growing things in her garden when we were teenagers. Maybe that's why I feel more protective of Corrigan's than I do over Bibbs, because I created it from nothing. That might also be the reason I put more effort into protecting it. Corrigan's has a working security system and is a hell of a lot harder to break into than Bibbs. Which is why I chose to spend tonight at Bibbs, even though Corrigan's is due to be broken into if we're going by the rotating schedule this kid has developed. The first night was Bibbs, the second night was Corrigan's, he took a few days off, and then the third and fourth incidents were at Bibbs. I may be wrong, but I have a feeling he'll show up here again before going back to Corrigan's, simply because he's had more success getting into the less secure of the two places. I just hope tonight isn't one of the nights he decides not to show up. He'll definitely show up here if he's hungry. Bibbs is his better bet for food, which is why I'm hiding on the far side of the dumpster waiting. I pulled over one of the tattered chairs the smokers use on their breaks, and I've been passing the time by reading. Lily's words have kept me company. A little too well, because there have been several times I've been so engrossed in the journal I forgot that I'm supposed to be on alert. I don't know for certain if the kid who has been vandalizing my restaurants is the same kid who shares a mother with me, but the timing makes sense. And the targeted insults that he's been spray painting make sense if they're coming from a kid who despises me. I can't think of anyone else who would have a good reason to be angry with me more than a little boy who feels abandoned by his older brother. It's almost 2 a.m. I check the security app on my phone for Corrigan's, but there's nothing new happening over there either. I go back to reading the journal, even though the last couple of entries have been painful to read. I didn't realize how much my leaving for Boston impacted Lily when she was younger. In my mind, at that age, I felt like an inconvenience in her life. I had no idea how much she felt I brought to her life. Reading the letter she wrote back then has been a lot more difficult than I expected it to be. I thought it would be fun to read her thoughts, but when I started reading them, I remembered how cruel our childhoods were to us. I don't think about it much anymore because I'm so far removed from the life I lived back then, but I'm being thrown back into those moments from every angle this week, it seems. The information in the journal entries, my mother, finding out I have a brother, it all feels like everything I've tried running from has formed a slow leak that's threatening to sink me. But then there's Lily, and her impeccable timing being back in my life. She always seems to show up when I need a lifeline. I flip through the rest of the journal and see that I'm already halfway through the last entry she made. I have very little recollection of that night because of the dreadful way it ended. Part of me doesn't even want to experience it from her point of view, but I can't not know how I left her feeling for all those years. I open the last entry and pick up where I left off. He took my hands in his and told me he was leaving sooner than he planned for the military, but that he couldn't leave without telling me thank you. He told me he'd be gone for 4 years and that the last thing he wanted for me was to be a 16-year-old girl not living my life because of a boyfriend I never got to see or hear from. The next thing he said made his blue eyes tear up until they looked clear. He said, "Lily, life is a funny thing. We only get so many years to live it, so we have to do everything we can to make sure those years are as full as they can be. We shouldn't waste time on things that might happen someday, or maybe even never." I knew what he was saying, that he was leaving for the military and he didn't want me to hold on to him while he was gone. He wasn't really breaking up with me because we weren't ever really together. We'd just been two people who helped each other when we needed it and got our hearts fused together along the way. It was hard, being let go by someone who had never really grabbed hold of me completely in the first place. In all the time we've spent together, I think we both sort of knew this wasn't a forever thing. I'm not sure why, because I could easily love him that way. I think maybe under normal circumstances, if we were together like typical teenagers and he had an average life with a home, we could be that kind of couple. The kind who comes together so easily and never experiences a life where cruelty sometimes intercepts. I didn't even try to get him to change his mind that night. I feel like we have the kind of connection that even the fires of hell couldn't sever. I feel like he could go spend his time in the military and I'll spend my years being a teenager, and then it will all fall back into place when the timing is right. "I'm going to make a promise to you," he said. "When my life is good enough for you to be a part of it, I'll come find you. But I don't want you to wait around for me because that might never happen." I didn't like that promise because it meant one of two things. Either he thought he might never make it out of the military alive, or he didn't think his life would ever be good enough for me. His life was already good enough for me, but I nodded my head and forced a smile. "If you don't come back for me, I'll come for you. And it won't be pretty, Atlas Corrigan." He laughed at my threat. "Well, it won't be too hard to find me. You know exactly where I'll be." I smiled. "Where everything is better." He smiled back. "In Boston." And then he kissed me. "Ellen, I know you're an adult and know all about what comes next, but I still don't feel comfortable telling you what happened over those next couple of hours. Let's just say we both kissed a lot. We both laughed a lot. We both loved a lot. We both breathed a lot. A lot. And we both had to cover our mouths and be as quiet and still as we could so we wouldn't get caught. When we were finished, he held me against him, skin to skin, hand to heart. He kissed me and looked straight in my eyes. "I love you, Lily. Everything you are, I love you." I know those words get thrown around a lot, especially by teenagers. A lot of times prematurely and without much merit, but when he said them to me, I knew he wasn't saying it like he was in love with me. It wasn't that kind of, "I love you." Imagine all the people you meet in your life. There's so many. They come in like waves, trickling in and out with the tide. Some waves are much bigger and make more of an impact than others. Sometimes the waves bring with them things from deep in the bottom of the sea, and they leave those things tossed onto the shore. Imprints against the grains of sand that prove the waves had once been there long after the tide recedes. That was what Atlas was telling me when he said, "I love you." He was letting me know that I was the biggest wave he'd ever come across. And I brought so much with me that my impressions would always be there even when the tide rolled out. After he said he loved me, he told me he had a birthday present for me. He pulled out a small brown bag. "It isn't much, but it's all I could afford." I opened the bag and pulled out the best present I'd ever received. It was a magnet that said Boston on the top. At the bottom, in tiny letters, it said, "Where everything is better." I told him I would keep it forever, and every time I look at it, I'll think of him. When I started out this letter, I said my 16th birthday was one of the best days of my life, because up until that second, it was. It was the next few minutes that weren't. Before Atlas had showed up that night, I wasn't expecting him, so I didn't think to lock my bedroom door. My father heard me in there talking to someone, and when he threw open my door and saw Atlas in bed with me, he was angrier than I'd ever seen him. and Atlas was at a disadvantage by not being prepared for what came next. I'll never forget that moment for as long as I live. Being completely helpless as my father came down on him with a baseball bat. The sound of bones snapping was the only thing piercing through my screams. I still don't know who called the police. I'm sure it was my mother, but it's been 6 months and we still haven't talked about that night. By the time the police got to my bedroom and pulled my father off of him, I didn't even recognize Atlas. He was covered in so much blood. I was hysterical. Hysterical. Not only did they have to take Atlas away in an ambulance, they also had to call an ambulance for me because I couldn't breathe. It was the first and only panic attack I've ever had. No one would tell me where he was or if he was even okay. My father wasn't even arrested for what he'd done. Word got out that Atlas had been staying in that old house and that he had been homeless. My father became revered for his heroic act, saving his little girl from the homeless boy who manipulated her into having sex with him. My father said I'd shamed our whole family by giving the town something to gossip about. And let me tell you, they still gossip about it. I heard Katie on the bus today telling someone she tried to warn me about Atlas. She said she knew he was bad news from the moment she laid eyes on him, which is crap. If Atlas had been on the bus with me, I probably would have kept my mouth shut and been mature about it like he tried to teach me to be. Instead, I was so angry, I turned around and told Katie she could go to hell. I told her Atlas was a better human than she'd ever be, and if I ever heard her say one more bad thing about him, she'd regret it. She just rolled her eyes and said, "Jesus, Lily, did he brainwash you?" He was a dirty, thieving, homeless kid who was probably on drugs. He used you for food and sex, and now you're defending him? She's lucky the bus stopped at my house right then. I grabbed my backpack and walked off the bus, then went inside and cried in my room for 3 hours straight. Now my head hurts, but I knew the only thing that would make me feel better is if I finally got it all out on paper. I've been avoiding writing this letter for 6 months now. No offense, Ellen, but my head still hurts. So does my heart. Maybe even more right now than it did yesterday. This letter didn't help one damn bit. I think I'm going to take a break from writing to you for a while. Writing to you reminds me of him, and it just all hurts too much. Until he comes back for me, I'm just going to keep pretending to be okay. I'll keep pretending to swim, when really all I'm doing is floating, barely keeping my head above water. Lily. I close the journal after reading the last page. I don't know what to feel because I feel everything. Rage, love, sadness, happiness. I've always hated that I couldn't remember most of that night, no matter how hard I tried to think back on every word that was said between us. The fact that Lily wrote it all down is a gift, albeit a sad one. There were so many things about that time in my life that I was afraid she was too fragile to hear. I only wanted to protect her from the negative stuff going on in my life. But reading her words has shown me that she didn't need protecting from it. If anything, she could have helped me through it. It makes me want to write her another letter, but even more, it makes me want to be in her presence, talking about these things face to face. I know we're taking things slow, but the more I'm around her, the more impatient I am to be around her again. I stand up to take the journal inside and to grab something to drink for the wait, but I pause as soon as I come to a stand. There's a streetlight at the other end of the alley creating a spotlight on the building, and there's a shadow moving across the light. The shadow travels across the building in the other direction as if whatever is casting the shadow is coming my way. I back up a step so that I can remain hidden. Someone eventually comes into view. A kid closes in on the back door. I don't know if this kid is my brother, but it's definitely the same person I saw on the security footage at Corrigan's. The same clothes, the same hoodie tightened around their face. I remain hidden and watch them, becoming more and more convinced by the second that it's exactly who I think it is. He's built like me. He even moves like me. I'm filled with anxious energy because I want to meet him. I want to tell him that I'm not angry and that I know what he's going through. I'm not sure I was even angry at whoever was doing this before I knew it could potentially be my brother. It's hard to be angry at a kid, but it's especially hard to be angry at one who was raised by the same woman who attempted to raise me. I know what it's like to have to do what you can to survive. I also know what it's like when you do anything to get someone's attention. Anyone's. There were times in my childhood I just wanted to be noticed, and I have a feeling that's exactly what's going on here. He's hoping to be caught. This is more a cry for attention than anything. He walks right up to the back door of the restaurant without an ounce of hesitation. This place has become familiar to him. He checks the back door to see if it's locked. When it doesn't open, he pulls a new can of spray paint out of his hoodie. I wait for him to lift it, and that's when I decide to make my presence known. "You're holding it wrong," my voice startles him. When he spins around and looks up at me and I see how young he really is, my heartstrings stretch so tight it feels like they're about to pop. I try to imagine Theo out here alone in the middle of the night like this. There's still a youthfulness to the fear in his eyes. When I start walking toward him, he backs up a step, looking around for a quick escape. But he doesn't attempt to run. I'm sure he's curious about what's going to happen. Isn't this why he's been showing up here night after night? I hold out my hand for the can of spray paint. He hesitates, but then he hands it to me. I demonstrate how to hold it the proper way. "If you do it like this, it won't drip. You hold it too close." Every emotion is running across his face as he studies me, from anger to fascination to betrayal. The two of us are quiet as we take in just how much we look alike. We both took after our mother. Same jawline, same light eyes, same mouths, down to the unintentional frown. It's a lot for me to take in. I've been resigned to the idea that I had no family, yet here he is in the flesh. It makes me wonder what he's feeling while he looks back at me. Anger, obviously. Disappointment. I lean a shoulder against the building, looking down at him with complete transparency. "I didn't know you existed, Josh. Not until a few hours ago." The kid shoves his hands into the pockets of his hoodie and looks at his feet. "Bullshit," he mutters. The hardness in him at such a young age makes me sad. I ignore the anger in his response and pull my keys out to unlock the back door to the restaurant. "You hungry?" I hold the door open for him. He looks like he wants to run, but after a moment of indecision, he ducks his head and walks inside. I flip on the lights and make my way into the kitchen. I grab the ingredients to make him a grilled cheese, and I start cooking while he walks around slowly, taking everything in. He touches things, opens drawers, cabinets. Maybe he's taking inventory for the next time he decides to break in. Or maybe his curiosity is a cover for his fear. I'm plating his food when he finally speaks up. "How do you know who I am if you didn't know I existed?" This feels like it could lead to a lengthy conversation, and I'd rather have it while he's more comfortable. There isn't a table back here with seating, so I motion toward the doors that lead into the dining room. There's enough light from the exit signs that I don't have to power up the dining room lights. "Sit here." I point to table 8 and he takes a seat in the exact spot our mother sat in earlier tonight. He starts eating as soon as I set his food down. "What do you want to drink?" He swallows and then shrugs. "Whatever." I go back to the kitchen and pour him a glass of ice water and then slide into the booth across from him. He drinks half of it in one gulp. "Your mother showed up here tonight," I say. "She's looking for you." He makes a face that indicates he doesn't care, and then he continues eating. "Where have you been staying?" "Places," he says with a mouthful. "Are you in school?" "Not lately." I let him get in a few more bites before I continue. The last thing I want to do is run him off with too many questions. Why did you run away? I ask. Because of her? Sutton? I nod. I wonder what kind of relationship they have if he doesn't even call her mom. Yeah, we got in a fight. We always fight over the stupidest shit. He eats his last bite, then downs the rest of his water. And your dad? Tim? He left when I was little. His eyes roam around the room, landing on the tree. When he looks back at me, he tilts his head. Are you rich? If I was, I wouldn't tell you. You've tried to rob me several times now. I can see the smirk playing across his lips, but he refuses to release it. He relaxes into the booth more, pulling his hoodie away from his face. Strands of greasy brown hair fall forward, and he pushes them back. His hair holds the shape of a cut that's long overdue, with sides that have grown out too long and uneven to be intentional. She told me you left because of me. She said you didn't want a brother. I have to hold back my irritation. I pull his empty plate of food and his glass toward me, and I stand up. I didn't know about you until today, Josh. I swear. I would have been around if I had. He eyes me from his seat, studying me, wondering if he can trust me. You know about me now. He says that like it's a challenge to do better, to prove his low expectations of the world wrong. I nudge my head toward the doors in the kitchen. You're right. Let's go. He doesn't immediately get out of the booth. Where to? My house. I have a room for you as long as you stop cussing so much. He raises an eyebrow. What are you, some kind of religious nut job? I motion for him to stand up. An 11-year-old muttering cuss words all the time seems desperate. It's not cool until you're at least 14. I'm not 11, I'm 12. Oh, she said you were 11. Still, too young to be cool. Josh stands up and starts to follow me through the kitchen. I spin and face him as I back through the doors. And for future reference, you spelled asshole wrong. There's no W. He looks surprised. I thought that looked funny after I wrote it. I put his dishes in the sink, but it's almost 3 a.m. and I'm not in the mood to wash them. I flip out the lights and have Josh lead the way out the back door. When I'm locking it, he says, Are you going to tell Sutton where I am? I don't know what I'm going to do yet, I admit. I start walking down the alley, and he rushes to catch up with me. I'm thinking of going to Chicago anyway, he says. I probably won't stay more than one night at your place. I laugh at the idea that this kid thinks I'm going to allow him to run off to another city now that I know he exists. What am I getting myself into? I have a feeling my day-to-day responsibilities have just doubled. Do we have any other siblings I don't know about? I ask him. Just the twins, but they're only 8. I stop in my tracks and look at him. He grins. I'm kidding. It's just the two of us. I shake my head and grab the back of his hoodie, pulling it down over his head. You're something. He's smiling when we make it to my car. I'm smiling too, until I feel a sharp stab of worry in the center of my gut. I've known him for 30 minutes. I've known of him for a fraction of a day, yet suddenly I feel like I'll be protective of him for a lifetime.
Chapter 16. Lily. You lose your mornings after having children. I used to open my eyes and lie in bed for several minutes before grabbing my phone and catching up on everything I might have missed while I slept. I'd have a cup of coffee and then mentally map out my day while I showered. But now that I have Emmy, her early morning cry rips me out of bed, and I become her gopher before I even have time to pee. I rush to change her, rush to clothe her, rush to feed her. By the time I'm finished with morning mother duties, I'm late for work and barely have time to do those things for myself. It's why I cherish Sunday mornings. It feels like the only day of the week I get any sense of calm. When Emmy wakes up on Sundays, I always bring her back to bed with me. We lie together, and I listen to her babble, and there's absolutely no rush to get up or be somewhere. Sometimes, like right now, she falls back to sleep, and I just stare at her for long stretches of time, marveling at the wonder that is motherhood. I grab my phone and take a picture of her to text to Ryle, but I hesitate before hitting send. I don't miss Ryle at all, but it does make me sad in moments like this that Ryle doesn't get to do this with us, or that I don't get to share in the joys they have together. There's nothing better than adoring the child you made with a person you made them with, which is why I always try to text him pictures and videos. But I'm still upset about last night and don't really feel like reaching out yet. I save the picture for a more peaceful day. Fucking Ryle. Divorce is difficult. I knew it would be, but it's so much harder than I anticipated. And navigating divorce with a child in the mix is a million times trickier. You're stuck interacting with that person for the remainder of your life. You have to either figure out a way to plan birthday parties together or figure out a way to be okay with having separate celebrations. You have to plan on which holidays each of you get to spend with your child, which days of the week, down to which hours of the day sometimes. You can't snap your fingers and be done with the person you married and divorced. You're stuck with them. Forever. I'm stuck dealing with Ryle's feelings forever. And frankly, I'm growing tired of always feeling sorry for him, worried for him, fearful of him, considerate of his feelings. How long am I supposed to wait before I start dating someone else without Ryle being justified in his jealousy? How long do I have to wait before I tell him I'm dating Atlas if Atlas and I become a thing? How long until I get to start making decisions about my own life without worrying about his feelings? My phone vibrates. It's my mother calling. I slide softly out of the bed to walk to the living room before answering it. Hey, can I have Emerson today? I laugh at her blatant disregard for her daughter now that she has a granddaughter. I'm good. How are you? My mother loves Emmy as much as I do. I'm convinced of that. When Emmy turned 6 weeks old, my mother started taking her for a few hours at a time while I worked. She actually stayed at her house overnight last month. It was Emmy's first night away from me since she'd been born. She had fallen asleep at my mother's, and neither of us wanted to wake her. So I went back for her the next morning. Rob and I are close by. We could come pick her up in 20 minutes. We're going to the botanical gardens. I thought it would be fun to get her out. I'm sure you could use the break. Yeah, sure. I'll get her dressed. Half an hour later, there's a knock at my door. I open it and let my mother and Rob inside. My mother beelines across the living room straight to Emmy, who was on a pallet on the floor. Hi, Mom, I say it teasingly. Look at this adorable outfit, my mother says, picking her up. Did I buy her this? No, it's a hand-me-down from Ryle, actually. It's nice that Ryle is 6 months older. We haven't had to buy Emmy many clothes because Elisa gives me more than enough of Ryle's. And they're always in great condition because I don't think Ryle ever wears an outfit twice. Emmy is wearing the outfit Ryle wore at her first birthday party. I was hoping it would eventually be passed down to Emmy because it's adorable. It's a pair of pink leggings with green whole watermelons on them and a green long sleeve top with a pink slice of watermelon in the center of it. My mother has bought almost everything else Emmy wears, including the blue jacket I'm putting on her right now. Well, that doesn't match her outfit, my mother says. Where's the pink jacket I bought her? It's too little. And it's a jacket, and she's 1 year old. It doesn't matter if she doesn't match. My mother huffs, and I can tell by that look on her face that Emmy is going to come home in a brand new jacket this afternoon. I kiss Emmy on the cheek, and my mother heads for the door. I hand Rob the diaper bag, and he hoists it over his shoulder.
Want me to carry her?
He asks my mother. She squeezes Emmy tighter. I've got her. She addresses me over her shoulder. We'll be back in a few hours. About what time? I ask her. I don't usually clarify a time with her, but I'm thinking about asking Atlas what he's doing right now. We can maybe grab lunch since we're both off today and I'm kid-free. I'll text you. Why? Are you going somewhere? She asks. I figured you'd just catch up on sleep. I don't dare tell her I might sneak away to meet a guy. She'd ask me questions well past the botanical garden closing hours. Yeah, I'll probably just sleep. I'll keep my phone on, though. Have fun. My mother is out the door and down the hallway, but Rob pauses and looks at me.
Make sure you park your car in the same spot. She'll notice if you move it, and she'll ask questions.
He winks, a clear indication that he can read me better than she can. Thanks for the heads up, I whisper. I close the door and go find my phone. I've been rushing to get Emmy dressed and out the door, so I haven't looked at my phone since I hung up with my mother. I have a missed call from Atlas from 20 minutes ago. My stomach flips with anticipation. I hope he's off today. I use my phone camera to check my appearance, and then I call him back over video chat. I hated when he called me over video chat the first time, but now it feels like the natural thing to do. I always want to see his face. I like seeing what he's wearing and where he's at, and the faces he makes when he says the things he says. I'm already smiling when I hear the sound that indicates he's answered the call. He lifts the phone, and when I finally make out what I'm looking at, I can see he's standing in an unfamiliar kitchen. It's white and bright and different from the kitchen I remember when I visited his house almost 2 years ago.
Morning,
he says. He's smiling, but he looks tired, like he either just woke up or is about to fall asleep. Hey.
Sleep well?
He asks. I did, finally. I squint my eyes, trying to see past him. Did you remodel your kitchen? Atlas glances over his shoulder and then looks back at me.
I moved.
What? When?
Earlier this year. Sold my house and got a place closer to the restaurant.
Oh, that's nice. Closer to the restaurant means closer to me. I wonder how far apart we live now. Are you cooking? Atlas aims his phone at his countertop. There's a pan of eggs, a pile of bacon, pancakes, and 2 plates. 2 glasses of juice. My heart drops. That's a lot of food, I say, attempting to hide the immense jealousy running through me.
I'm not alone,
he says, panning the screen back to his face. My disappointment must be clearly written all over me because he immediately shakes his head.
No, Lily, that's not...
He laughs and seems flustered. His reaction is adorable, but not entirely reassuring yet. He holds the phone up a little higher until I can see a person standing behind him. I'm not sure who's with him, but it isn't another woman. It's a kid. A kid who looks just like Atlas, and he's staring right at me with eyes that look identical to Atlas's eyes. Does he have a child I don't know about? What is going on?
She thinks I'm your son, the kid says. You're freaking her out.
Atlas immediately aims the phone back at his own face.
He's not my son. He's my brother.
Brother? Atlas moves the phone so that I'm looking at his brother again.
Say hi to Lily.
No.
Atlas rolls his eyes and shoots me an apologetic look.
He's kind of a jerk.
He says that right in front of his little brother. Atlas, I whisper, shocked at every part of this conversation.
It's okay. He knows he's a jerk.
I see the kid laugh behind him, so I know he knows Atlas is kidding. But I am so confused. I had no idea you had a brother.
I didn't know either. Found out last night after our date.
I think back on last night and how it was obvious something was bothering him about the text he received, but I had no idea it was a family issue. I guess this explains why his mother was trying to contact him. Sounds like you have a lot to work through today.
Wait, don't hang up yet,
he says. He walks out of the kitchen and into another room for privacy. He closes a door and sits down on his bed.
Biscuits still have about 10 minutes. I can chat.
Wow. Pancakes and biscuits? He's a lucky kid. I had black coffee for breakfast.
Atlas smiles, but his smile doesn't reach his eyes. He seemed like he was in a good mood in front of his brother, but now that I have him alone, I can see the stress in the way he's holding himself.
"Where's Emmy?"
he asks. "My mother has her for a few hours." When it registers that we're both off work and I don't have Emmy, he sighs like he's bummed.
"You mean you actually have a free day?"
"It's okay. We're taking it slow, remember? Besides, it's not every day you find out you have a little brother." He dives a hand through his hair and sighs.
"He's the one who has been vandalizing the restaurants."
I startle at that comment. I need to hear more of this story.
"That's why my mother tried calling me last week, to see if I'd heard from him. I feel like a dick for blocking her number now."
"You didn't know?" I'm standing in my living room, but I want to sit down for this conversation. I walk to the couch and set my phone on the arm of it, propping it up with a pop socket. "Did he know about you?" Atlas nods.
"Yeah, and he thought I knew about him, which is why he was taking out his anger on my restaurants. Other than the thousands of dollars he cost me, he seems like a good kid. Or he at least seems like he has the potential to be a good kid. I don't know. He's gone through a lot of the shit I went through with my mother, so there's no telling what that's done to him."
"Is your mother there too?" Atlas shakes his head.
"I haven't told her I found him yet. I spoke to a friend of mine who's a lawyer, and he said the sooner I tell her the better, so she can't use it against me."
"Use it against him? Are you wanting to get custody of him?" Atlas nods without hesitation.
"I don't know if that's what Josh wants, but there isn't another option I could live with. I know what kind of mother she is. He mentioned wanting to find his father, but Tim is even worse than my mother."
"What kind of rights do you have as his brother? Any?" Atlas shakes his head.
"Not unless my mother agrees to let him live with me. Not looking forward to that conversation. She'll say no just to spite me, but..."
Atlas releases a heavy sigh.
"If he stays with her, he won't have a chance in hell. He's already harder than I was at that age. Angrier. I'm afraid of what that anger might turn into if he doesn't gain some stability in his life. But who's to say I'm capable of something like this? What if I fuck him up more than my mother has?"
"You won't, Atlas. You know you won't." He accepts my reassurance with a quick flash of a smile.
"That's easy for you to say. You're a natural at this whole raising kids thing."
"I just fake it well," I say. "I have no idea what I'm doing. No parent does. We're all full of imposter syndrome, winging it every minute of the day."
"Why is that both comforting and terrifying?"
he asks. "You just summed up parenthood with those two words." He exhales.
"I should probably get back in there and make sure he isn't robbing me. I'll call you later today, okay?"
"Okay. Good luck." The way Atlas silently mouths the word goodbye in return is sexy as hell. When I end the call, I fall onto my bed and sigh. I love the way I feel after I talk to him. He makes me giddy and energized and happy, even when the call is as shocking and chaotic as that one was. I wish I knew where he lived. I'd go give him a drive-by hug like the one he gave me last night. I hate that he's dealing with this, but at the same time, I'm happy for him. I can't imagine how alone he's felt since I met him, not having a single family member in his life. And that poor kid. It's like Atlas all over again, as if one kid feeling that unloved by their mother wasn't enough. My phone chimes, indicating I have a text. I smile when I see it's from him. I smile even bigger when I see how long the text is.
"Thank you for being the most comforting part of my life right now. Thank you for always being the beacon I need every time I feel lost. Whether you mean to shine on me or not, I am grateful for you. I've missed you. I absolutely should have kissed you."
I'm covering my mouth with my hand when I finish reading it. I'm filled with so much emotion, I don't know where to put it. Josh is lucky to have you in his life now. Within seconds, Atlas hearts my text. Then I send another one. "And you're right. You absolutely should have kissed me." Atlas hearts that text, too.
Chapter 17. Atlas. Josh doesn't trust me, but I'll wear him down. I'm willing to bet he doesn't trust anyone, so I'm not taking it personally. If his childhood is anything like mine was, I'm sure he's been toughened at the age of 12 in a way that no kid should be familiar with. As much as he glares at me with distrustful eyes, I can also sense that he's curious about me. He doesn't ask many questions, but he watches me in a way that makes it obvious he has a million questions on the tip of his tongue. For whatever reason, he keeps swallowing them down. He's probably wondering why I went so easy on him last night after finding out he's the one who damaged my restaurants. He's also probably wondering why I didn't know about him, and how I turned out so vastly different from my mother and Tim. Whatever he's wondering, he's attempting to keep a tight lid on his expressions. I don't want to make him feel uncomfortable, so I've been doing most of the talking while he eats breakfast. It's not that hard. I have just as many questions for him as he does for me. It's one of the reasons I couldn't sleep last night when we finally made it to my house. I kept listening for the sound of him trying to sneak out of the house. I was honestly shocked he was still here this morning. As much as my questions are probably annoying him, I can remember what it was like to be 12. All I wanted was for someone to be interested in who I was, even if they were faking interest. If his life is anything like mine was, he's gone 12 years being ignored, and I refuse to allow him to feel that way under my roof. But I've only been asking him safe questions. I'll ease into the more difficult stuff. Josh eats one thing at a time, a biscuit first, then bacon. He's cutting into the pancakes for the first time when I say, "What are you interested in? Any hobbies?" He takes a bite, and one of his eyebrows raises a bit, but I don't know if it's because of the food or my question. "Why? Why am I asking what you're interested in?" His neck is stiff when he nods. "I've missed 12 years of your life. I want to know who you are." Josh breaks eye contact and forks more pancakes into his mouth. "Manga," he mutters. That surprises me, but thanks to Theo, I actually know what manga is. "What's your favorite series?" "One Piece." He shakes his head, erasing that answer. "No, Chainsaw Man is probably my favorite." That's about as far into that conversation as I can go without sounding ignorant. "We can go to a bookstore later today if you want." He nods. "These are good pancakes." "Thanks." I watch him take a drink of his juice, and when he sets the glass down, he says, "What are you interested in?" He nods toward the plate. "Other than cooking." I don't know how to answer that. Most of my time is given to my restaurants. Whatever time I have left over is spent on house repairs, laundry, sleep. "I like the cooking channel." Josh chuckles. "That's sad." "Why?" I said, "besides cooking." It's a harder question than I thought now that it's being thrown back at me. "I like museums," I say, "and going to the movies, and traveling. I just don't do any of those things."
"Because you're always working?"
"Yeah."
Like I said, sad.
He leans over his plate to catch another bite of pancake. The get-to-know-you questions are backfiring, so I cut right to the chase. "What was your fight about?" He shrugs. "Half the time, I don't even know what the hell I do wrong. She just gets mad for no reason." "I can relate to that." I let him eat for a while before I pose another question. "Where have you been staying?" Josh doesn't look at me. He scoots food around on his plate for a moment and then says, "Your restaurant?" His eyes slowly journey back over to mine. "You have a really comfortable couch in your office."
"You've been sleeping inside the restaurant? For how long?"
"2 weeks."
I'm in shock. "How have you been getting in?"
"You don't have an alarm at that one restaurant, and I finally figured out how to pick the lock after a few tries." "Your other restaurant was too hard to get into, though."
"You know how to pick..." I can't help but laugh. Brad and Darren are going to love saying I told you so. Why'd you go from sleeping there to vandalizing it? Josh looks at me reluctantly. I don't know. I guess I was mad. He pushes his plate away and leans back in his chair. What now? Do I have to go back to her? What do you want to happen? I want to live with my dad. He scratches at his elbow. Can you help me find him? I want to find Tim about as much as I wanted to find my mother, which is not at all. Do you know anything about him? I think he lives in Vermont now. I just don't know where. When's the last time you saw him? A few years ago. But he doesn't know where to find me anymore. Josh looks every bit his age right now. A fragile kid, abandoned by his father but refusing to lose hope. I don't want to be the one to rip that from him, so I just nod. Yeah, I'll see what I can do. But for now, I need to let your mother know you're okay. I have to call her. Why? If I don't, this could be considered kidnapping. Not if I'm here willingly, he says. Even if you're here willingly, you aren't old enough to decide where you want to live, and right now, your mother has legal custody of you. He grows visibly irritated. He stabs at his breakfast with a scowl but doesn't take another bite. I step away to call Sutton. I unblocked her number after she left my restaurant last night in case she needed to get in touch with me. I dial her number and put the phone in my ear. After a few rings, she finally answers with a very groggy hello. Hey, I found him. Who is this? I briefly close my eyes while I wait for her to wake up and remember her son is missing. After a few quiet seconds, she goes, Atlas? Yeah. I found Josh. I can hear rustling from her end like she's hopping out of bed. Where has he been? I really don't want to answer that. I know she's his mother, but I feel like it's none of her business where he's been, which is an unusual opinion to have. I'm not sure where he's been, but he's with me now. Listen, I was wondering if he could stay here for a while, maybe give you a break. You want him to stay there with you? The way she puts the emphasis on that last word makes me wince. This is going to be harder than I thought. She's the type of person who fights for the sake of fighting, no matter what outcome she really wants. I could enroll him in school and make sure he attends, I offer up. Take the truancy heat off you. It's quiet on her end, like maybe she's contemplating that. Such a martyr, she mutters. Bring him back. Now. She ends the call. I attempt to call her back 3 times, but she sends the calls to voicemail. It didn't sound promising, Josh says. He's standing in the doorway of the kitchen. I'm not sure how much he heard on my end, but at least he couldn't hear her end. I slide my phone in my pocket. She wants you back today, but I'll call a lawyer tomorrow. Hell, I'll call Child Protective Services if you want me to. There's just not much I can do on a Sunday. Josh's shoulders drop when I say that. Will you at least give me your phone number? He asks that like he's scared I'm going to say no. Of course. I'm not going to abandon you now that I know you exist. He picks at a hole in his sleeve, avoiding eye contact with me when he says, I wouldn't blame you for being mad at me. I cost you a lot of money. You did do that, I say. Those croutons were expensive. Josh laughs for the first time this morning. Dude, those croutons were fucking delicious. I groan. Don't use that word. The Rysmore Inn is clear on the other side of Boston. It takes us 45 minutes with traffic to get there, and it's not even a weekday. When we pull into the parking lot, Josh doesn't immediately get out of the car. He just sits quietly in the passenger seat, staring at the building like it's the last place he wants to be. I wish I didn't have to return him to his mother, but I put in another call to my lawyer friend this morning after talking with Sutton. He said if I want to go about this the right way without her having ammunition against me, the only thing I can do is return him. And then, If I want to take her to court, he said I need to get a lawyer and go through the process. Anything done outside the process could be a mark against me. Apparently, you can't just kidnap your sibling, even if you know they're in danger. I wanted to explain all of this to Josh in more detail, to let him know I'm not just abandoning him with her. But he's so hell-bent that he's going to live with his dad, I'm not sure he even wants to live with me. And I'm not sure I'm prepared to raise a little brother, but as long as I'm alive, there's no way I can willingly leave him in this woman's permanent custody without at least trying. Until I can figure out what to do next, I don't want him to find himself in a situation where he has no food to eat or no money to extend their hotel stay. I pull out my wallet and hand him a credit card. Can I trust you with this? Josh looks at the credit card in my hand and his eyes grow a little wide. I don't know why you would. I've spent the last 2 weeks trying to destroy your businesses. I push the credit card toward him. Use it for basic necessities. Food, minutes for your phone. We stopped on the way here and got him a prepaid phone so he could stay in touch with me. Maybe some new clothes that fit. Josh reluctantly takes the credit card out of my hand. I don't even know how to use one of these. You just swipe it, but don't tell Sutton you have it. I point at his phone. Hide it between your case and your phone. He pops the case off his phone and puts the credit card inside of it. And he says, thank you. He puts his hand on the car door. Are you coming to talk to her? I shake my head. It's probably best if I don't. It'll probably just make her angrier. Josh sighs, and then gets out of the car. We stare at each other for a few seconds before he finally closes the car door. I feel like such a dick bringing him back here. But I have to do this the right way. If I don't return him, she could file charges on me. And knowing her, she probably would. It's best if I just leave him for today, and then as soon as the week begins tomorrow, I can make phone calls and figure out what I can do to move him in with me. I know if he stays here with her, he isn't going to have a chance in hell. I lucked out finding Lily. She saved my life. But I'm not sure there's enough luck in the world for both of us to be saved by a random stranger. I'm all he has. I remain in my car as Josh makes his way across the parking lot. He walks up the stairs and knocks on the second door from the end. He looks over his shoulder at me, so I wave right as the door swings open. I can see the rage in Sutton's eyes all the way from my position in the parking lot. She immediately begins yelling at him, and then she slaps him. My hand is on the door handle before Josh even has a chance to react to the slap. Sutton's hand is now gripping Josh's arm as she yanks him into the hotel room. I'm several feet away from my car when I see him trip over the threshold and disappear into the room. I'm taking the stairs two at a time, my heart racing. I reach the door before she even closes it. Josh is still trying to scramble to his feet, but she's hovering above him, scolding him. I could have gone to jail, you little shit! She has no idea I'm behind her. I wrap my arm around her waist and pull her away from Josh by picking her up and dropping her onto the mattress behind me. It happens so fast she's too shocked to react. I help Josh to his feet. His phone is a few feet away on the floor, so I grab it and hand it to him, then urge him toward the door. Sutton realizes what's happening and she jumps off the bed. She's following us out the door. Bring him back! I feel her hands on me now. She's yanking at my shirt, trying to get me to stop or move aside so she can get to Josh. I urge him forward, go to the car. He continues toward the stairs, and then I stop walking and spin around to face her. She sucks in a quick gasp after seeing the absolute fury in my eyes. Then she slaps her palms against my chest and shoves me. He's my son, she yells. I'll call the police. I release an exasperated laugh. I want to tell her to call the police. I want to scream at her. But most of all, I want to get Josh away from her. She's not going to ruin his life on my watch. I don't even have the energy to say anything to her at all. This woman isn't worth my words. I just walk away, leaving her screaming at me like old times. Josh is already sitting in the front seat of my car when I make it back. I slam my door and grip my steering wheel with both hands before starting the car. I need to calm myself down before I get back on the road. Josh seems unusually calm for what just happened. It makes me wonder if that's an average interaction between them because he isn't even breathing heavily. He's not crying, he's not cussing, he's just watching me. And I realize how I react in this moment is quite possibly something he'll absorb for a lifetime. I slide my hands down the steering wheel and calmly exhale. Josh's cheek is red, and there's a small gash on his forehead that's bleeding. I retrieve a napkin from the glove box and hand it to him, then flip the visor down so he can see where to wipe. I saw her slap you, but where'd the cut come from? I think I hit the TV stand. Slow and steady, Atlas. I put my car in reverse and back out of the parking lot. Maybe we should swing by the emergency room and have them check out your cut. Make sure you don't have a concussion. It's okay. I can usually tell when it's a concussion. He can usually tell? I clench my jaw as soon as he says that. I realize I have absolutely no idea what kind of hell this kid has already been through, and I was about to send him right back into the fire. Better to be safe, I say. But what I mean is, better to get this documented in case we need proof of her abuse at a later date.